Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 70 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
All right, so announcements this week.
August 2013.
It totally felt like this was a super exciting week. Like this had me kind of nailed to my chair in front of my computer screen.
All the way to the all the way?
Sure. But for the latter portion of the week, like it there was a couple of things in the beginning of the week, and then at the end of the week it just felt like a deluge of new things.
Seriously.
That were all equally awesome.
It would not quit. And I say thank you for that.
No, keep it up, keep it up. Because you know Christmas is next week and I like presents. The first thing we got this week was the announcement of the Outlander Yule Log, which they're going to be airing on Stars the 15 minutes before they start the Outlander Marathon on, I believe, Christmas Day. So they're going to show 15 minutes of it on DirecTV, but if you can't tune into it then, there's an hour and a half of it online that you can pull directly from.
Seriously, I might want to pull that for my personal library because it is, I mean, the music, obviously, lovely. But when I first saw it, I thought, for sure, I said, Summer, there's no way. Okay, 90 minutes, there's no way. It is 90 minutes. It has to be, visually at least, it has to be looped. Honestly, I think it's 90 minutes of a camera just watching the scene. Those dogs walk in and out, lay down, get up, walk away. I mean, different things come on
screen.
All right,
so total brutal honesty right now. Did you literally watch 90 minutes
of
it? Oh,
no, I clicked through.
Okay. It would not have surprised me had you said that you sat and watched 90 minutes
of dogs
sleeping.
I don't have 90 minutes. Dog sleeping, Summer. I don't have 90 minutes to watch dogs sleep.
No, but I sure did have 5 minutes earlier this week to watch a BuzzFeed video of people receiving puppies for Christmas. It was so cute. I cried. Anyway, and so did everyone else in the video. We got a couple new shots from the Outlander Stars Instagram account. Some more behind the scenes stuff from episodes we've already seen. One is Frank at the Stones. I'm assuming it's the scene where they almost find
each
other.
Run to each other.
I still want to know if she started traveling when they pulled her off, the Stones.
You know what? It's funny. It could have just been the change from, like, time to time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just like, if I'm not mistaken, I'll have to go back and watch it. But in episode one, when she went back, the screen went black, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't there blackness here?
Yes.
Holy heck balls.
Which
so,
is, yeah.
Maybe.
So.
See, you can do those kind of things and not change the story. So, the long-term
right.
story. You can add these little things, which don't change things, but they're nice additions and make you think and get you all thinking about, well, I guess the TT, that's not really about the TT. The TT stuff is more about, is genetics. Never mind.
I know you mean time travel, but every time you say TT, I'm thinking like boobies.
Oh, there are plenty of boobies in this episode,
yes.
too. And it's not our fault.
No, it's not. But however, if we ever do corner Ron Moore, I'm going to ask him.
About the boobies?
No, you weirdo.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Whether or not she started
blackness.
Traveling. Good Lord. I can't take you anywhere.
You haven't taken me anywhere.
There's a reason for that. We also got another shot. This one is of, I mean, Tobias Menzies was featured this week in the Instagram
this
account.
Was
this was the
Tobias
first time,
week.
The first time that Claire and Jack Rack.
I know you're going to call him Jack Crack. I was like, Summer, what? What did you say?
This is the first
Jack Rack. And she's not even drinking at all.
It was a combination.
Except for
okay.
tea.
All right. And this one is a picture of Claire the first time she comes into contact with Black Jack Randall.
Okay, so that's where the ack came from.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, and this one I wrote, and no, I do not condone adultery, but I did write, I'd wear that, something like that. I'd wear that color letter, whatever.
So the
can't even know what to say.
In the Outlander offerings, we got another Outlander offering, and this one was a video of Angus and Rupert. Well, technically, it wasn't Angus and Rupert; it was the
Rupert.
Actors.
No, I know,
it was
but it
the
was...
actors. Well, because they weren't in character.
I understand that, but no, I thought you were going somewhere else. It was mostly Rupert. But Angus did chat.
That's pretty standard, though.
I know.
Angus is like, you know, little dog syndrome, where he gets angry a lot, but he's a man of fewer words.
Rupert was just like going on, and it was hilarious.
It was. But, I mean, which shows how much like their characters they are, I would say. So, because Rupert is definitely the funnier of the two in his own way. Mostly because of his, like, diarrhea of the mouth.
I was not prepared for you using that word.
But it's a super cute video. It's up. We have it linked, and I know it's also available on the Starz website as well. So, yeah, the 19th of December was...
A pretty big day.
It was a big day for me. So we all got new desktop background images, which is now on all of my gadgets, pretty much my iPad, my phone, my computer, and everything.
I haven't changed it yet. Do I need to?
Yeah.
I still have the poster image.
Which is a nice image.
I went from the hay, right? Remember? Jamie and the
hay. Yeah.
Jamie and the hay with the pitchfork, whatever it was. I had that until we had the poster image-ish. Mm-hmm. I've had the poster image since whenever I did it, which was at least this summer or late spring or whatever. So maybe it's time for a change.
I like this shot. It's a shot of Jamie and Claire.
And she's wearing the ring.
She's wearing the wedding ring. And there's just, he doesn't even have his eyes open. Like, but she's like kind of looking at him and his eyes are shut. And there's just, so much is being said with just nothing. This image. Of, yeah.
And she's,
I love it.
I mean, both of them, but mostly her, she looks very bedraggled. And... at least her hair, and she's wrapped in his plaid. Now, we're not going to say anything. There's a lot of speculation about what this image with the still is from, and what we have heard, we agree with, and we would also say that most likely that is so, but there's been no confirmation about where this is from, and so we won't know until we see it.
Correct.
But if you've read the book and you know stuff, you may think it's obvious.
It could be a couple of different things.
Yeah, I've only heard... one thing being.
Well, that's just what people were saying online.
No, that's what
I personally think it could be a couple different things. It doesn't have to be just one specific thing. I mean, it is one specific thing. That's the nature.
It is most likely one specific thing. But yeah,
No matter what it is one specific thing, is my point. And on the same day we got our new image.
I mean, seriously.
We also got a new trailer. And the last trailer, I think, was like, I don't know, 30 seconds. Like, it was very brief. And it was mostly... like
fast flash images
that are hard to keep up with, but someone always comes back and does a slow motion capture of it, so we can always go back and enjoy it that way. But this one was a combination of the last trailer. There were some new images as well, and some new dialogue that was not in the previous one, but it also featured the actors. Namely, it was Ron Moore, who's not an actor, obviously, but Ron Moore, Sam Heughan, Dougal McKenzie, and Katrina. I called him Dougal McKenzie.
Summer's really into this show.
I am, just a little bit. Graham McTavish.
Katrina.
And Katrina. I think it was just those four. Basically kind of doing their job to pimp the mid-season.
Promote.
Pimp, giving you reasons why you should join back in and come back in April. It's a long ways away, y'all.
So there is something that may or may not be news. Apparently, I read somewhere that it has been posted before, but this is my first time seeing it. And Diana posted on her Facebook page, as she does a lot with her daily lines. We do not read. Summer and I don't read. And we definitely don't usually post or share daily lines because they're there for anyone to see at any time. But this one just was something special to me, and I did share it because it's not from one of the big books, and it's not from the upcoming book, book number 9, but it's from the prequel of the story of Jamie's parents, Brian and Ellen McKenzie. And it was very sweet. I'm not going to say anything more than that, but if you are not averse to reading daily lines at all, or you're at least not averse to reading a little bit about a decent little scene between those two characters, I would urge you to do it. It was just very, very sweet. And whenever I hear or read anything about that prequel, my heart kind of breaks again. Because, you know, that book, as I put on Facebook, that book's going to slay me. I don't know why, but almost more than Jamie and Claire.
Maybe because you know how it ends. Like, for real. Vulture.com came out with their 10 best TV opening credits of 2014. And Outlander just made the cut at number 10. And also notably, another Starz show made the list, Black Sails, which was also written by Bear McCreary. BuzzFeed came out with a list of their 32 TV men who made you thirsty in 2014. And our own Jamie Fraser, Mr. Sam Heughan, made number 5, which after having looked at 1 through 4, I honestly think he should have been number 1. All right. And lastly, this one kind of... This was everywhere on the internet, but it kind of made me smile because I thought it was awesome. But
when a subject makes it to popular...
As a pop culture reference.
Yes.
It's bigger than it was. Because, I mean, these books have been out for 20-some-odd years, and they have never...
That I know of.
...been a question on Jeopardy.
An answer on Jeopardy.
That's right. Well, both. Well,
that's true.
And not only that, but... She was the most expensive block in that channel.
In that row?
Yeah.
No, column, sorry.
Column, yeah. She was the,
Column McKenzie. Sorry.
But she was the question. It said, written in my own heart's blood is Diana Gabaldon's 8th novel in the series about Claire Randall in the 18th century. And we all know, of course, that is, what is Outlander? So, congrats. You finally made it, lady. And that wraps up our announcements, so we will move on to this week's read-along, Chapter 9, The Splendors of Versailles. And I'm fairly sure the splendor she is speaking of is the weird boobies.
So this chapter opens with Claire making her entrance in the red dress. Jenny, who works for Colonial Williamsburg in all of the trade shops, but whose primary study is in historic fiction and textiles, as well as 18th century domestic life, so basically she knows some stuff, is a listener who shared with us the following. I love chapter 9 because it's one of the few times Claire has ever really had to focus on fashion because she's going to Versailles. She always strikes me as someone practical, especially when it comes to her dress. Allowing her mantua maker to pick out her gown is a brave thing to do. It was usually up to the customer to decide every aspect. So
I would agree with that. However, being that she's not of the time period, she wouldn't know what was appropriate to wear and what not to wear. So of course she's going to leave it up to somebody else because she's like, I'm going to trust you because I have no idea what is appropriate to be worn at the French court.
Jamie's reaction is that it's very red. Claire confirms this by telling him that it's sang du Christ, or Christ's blood, red. Jamie had wanted her to have a dress made that would have her stand out in the crowd. ... Connie writes, probably 99% of Outlander fandom is on tenterhooks waiting to see what Terry Dresbach does for the design of this iconic red dress. The description in this chapter includes these tidbits.
Tidbits.
Filmy gussets of silk plissé. Color, sang du Christ, or blood of Christ, is the shade of red, the fashionable color of the time. A huge overskirt, a lining of white charmeuse. Quote, I can see every inch of you down to the third rib. Which rib would that be? And then Jamie also says, I can see down to your navel. So we'll include in our blog post, or a link to the picture of the rib cage, where you can see exactly how high... or low, depending on how you're looking at it, the third rib is. Jamie had been visiting with Bonnie Prince Charlie weekly to keep tabs on his plans. He wasn't yet visiting court, meaning the prince, remember, because he hadn't been invited. Both to keep up their plans and to help widen Jared's business contacts, Jamie and Claire are going into society. Connie shares, Jamie and Claire had talked about what his goals would be at this ball. To try to subtly let it be known that most Scots wouldn't want the Stuarts back again. So their plans are going into motion. This is why, as far as Jamie's uncle, the Abbot, is concerned, this is why they're there. Or one of the reasons why they're there, besides escaping Scotland. Also, Connie says, Myrta has just spent the last 2 weeks shepherding a quantity of whiskey from Scotland to Jared Sellers in Paris. So Myrta has been back to Scotland. And that was a purpose, if not the purpose, but we don't hear a lot about his time in Scotland, so, So when they were preparing, or Jamie was saying, you know, look, we need to go out into society, and then here's this opportunity to go to attend this ball, that meant that they needed proper clothing. Jamie says, all the nobility care about is appearances. So to start with, We must offer them something interesting to look at. Oh, Jamie, how far your words will be taken. Jamie was not a fan of what exactly she was proffering to give them to look at. So this dress, it must be incredibly revealing. Is it like the red version, the front anyway, of that black dress that Mia Sara dances into in Legend?
Obviously not.
I mean, it just doesn't go down to her navel literally, but it could have that white in between.
I don't think it will be that deep.
Me either. My point is that's what I think of when I think of this shocking, not the color, but this shocking front, how deep it goes. You could see her navel in that.
Not all you could see.
And we will have a link to a YouTube video of that is the scene in Legend when Mia Sara dances into this dress. It's one of my favorite movies, but I love the way that they did that. Jamie says to be careful and that the dress makes him want to commit rape on the spot. And could she not cover up with a ruffle or something? I don't know why that makes me laugh. Like, a ruffle's going to do all the job. I mean,
a fantastically large ruffle.
Well, see, we don't know how deep this is. It just could be Jamie's, as we will see later in the chapter, much more is shown than what he is seeing on Claire. But, I mean, until I see it, I don't know how big of a ruffle that will need to be.
Well, we all know it won't be a ruffle.
That's true. So she takes a larger fan to appease him. Connie describes Jamie's outfit. A lace jabot with ruby stick pin, kilt and plaid, coat and waistcoat of stiffened yellow silk, and flaming hair loose on his shoulders with a single small braid down one side in the ancient Scots fashion. And she says, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I think we are too, because right now, as is fitting with the story, he's still got relatively short hair. I mean, Colm's got the longest hair that exists, but Dougal is just not. I'm glad they went with an au naturel Grant, because that would have, I mean, it could have been nice, but I'm glad they went with Dougal the way he is, or Grant the way he is. But I am looking forward to seeing Jamie. I wonder if they're going to let him grow it out or if he's going to have to wear a wig. Because I hope they let him grow it out. But that poor Sam.
I don't think
not being able to cut your hair for the next, like, 10 years.
You know what, though? I don't think his hair is going to be remotely long enough
by himself to start filming.
Yeah. Though I would like to say that my daughter wears her hair like this all the time. So apparently she wears it like an ancient Scottish man.
As a man. So at Versailles, she meets an acquaintance of Jamie's from his previous time in France, Annalise de Marillac, or Marillac. And Claire is very much aware of her everything, as she sees the tininess of this woman. She takes Jamie to play chess, the woman, Annalise, takes Jamie to play chess for an influential group of men, and Jamie tells Claire to stay out of trouble, and definitely to stay out of the alcoves. Wah, wah, wah! So Claire begins to hold her own court after Jamie leaves. Her feet began to hurt. Her face did from smiling. And I wrote, isn't that the truth? You've been, whether it's an event or something where you're like in a receiving line. I think we've all had an experience where we've been through this. But I know Summer and I have where, for whatever the reason, you had to smile for like an hour or whatever it is. And your face just, it hurts.
I mean, I'm the first to admit that I have resting bee face. Do you know what that is?
I do.
So smiling at all takes an effort when it, like, that's not my relaxed state of my face. So the effort I have to put into to keep a smile just to placate other people so they think I'm not angry is annoying enough. But having to be at an event where you have to hold that face for a very long time is definitely tiring.
So there's the mental effort that you're talking about before or in addition to the physical effort. I'm talking
correct.
Only about
I'm
the
talking
physical
all
effort.
Of it.
Do you have any tricks? Anything that helps that? Either whether it's now that you brought up the mental, a mental trick or something like Vaseline?
No, that would only
help with your teeth.
Keep your lips from sticking to your teeth. I mean, that
but
doesn't.
But it's a thing.
It is a thing, but it's not anything I would do. I would rather just, I don't know. Hydrated.
When Claire is eating a snack, she spreads the fan out under her chin. Haven't we all done that?
Dude,
Not with a fan, but with a something.
I could definitely have used more fans when I was pregnant.
Oh, well, she's not that big yet.
No. She's not. Oh, no, of course not. I'm just saying that eating anything, everything just falls in general.
It's like a classy bib, right? Her fan.
I mean, that's what she's using it for.
Yeah, like a placemat. She's trying to keep the crumbs out of her cleavage because they're like nothing.
Cleavage?
Because there's nothing there except that.
Is that the French pronunciation of cleavage?
No, it's my funny pronunciation. Connie agrees. She says, she used it as a bib to keep crumbs out of her bosom, and to discourage overly ardent admirers by wrapping them smartly on the head. And I love the head bops.
It's true, but can you imagine? Okay, she's eating things that are crumbly. Getting a crumb.
I know.
In your in your bra, like that would. And she doesn't even have a bra on. Like, I can't imagine trying to get a crumb back out of the inside of my fancy, fancy red dress, as opposed to, I'd rather just keep it out, because that just sounds like it would be awful.
So as Claire is manically fanning herself to keep them away, she is blowing their curls with her fanning. They're mostly shorter than her. And as I said, she even goes Little Bunny Foo Foo on their booties. Well, actually on their heads, like the song. You remember that song?
Yes, I know that
Okay. song. Then here comes the king. So this is an entrance. Could you imagine? Just Diana's description of his clothing is just sumptuous. Jenny says, the French are so over the top, especially during Louis's reign. But I think he and Colum would probably get along due to their appreciation for the theatrical. But that might only last for about 5 minutes. When the king goes to them and Jamie bows, and then he starts to wiggle his fingers. And she doesn't know what he's doing. She's like, oh, curtsy. Okay, got it. Before she reacted to that, and I was just reading the words, I'm like, Jamie, what is this finger flutter?
Okay, but from now on, if I flutter my fingers at you, you need
to
curtsy.
I have to curtsy? Never.
From now on.
Never.
Forever.
Forever.
I'm going to teach my daughter that. I'm going to be like, if I waggle my fingers at her, she needs to curtsy.
That's not very nice.
Curtsy.
At least Claire was mostly covered. And by mostly, we know that that's not the case. But comparatively, the dress of the king's favorite was missing some parts. It was cut below both breasts with just a little gauze floating in that general area. And that's not all. The most interesting part, she had some jewelry on. Care to describe that for us, Summer?
The jewelry? Let me find that.
There's a rather long paragraph describing...
I will read all of it.
Hold on. Describing this jewelry and their setting. Jamie is, quote, watching the king's mistress with no pretense whatever of tactful obviousness.
I mean, honestly, if you were dressed like this, you are expecting everyone to be staring at them. Okay. So it says, while reasonably adequate in size, pleasant in proportion, and tipped with large brownish areola.
Areoli.
Were further adorned with a pair of nipple jewels that caused their settings to recede into insignificance. I don't think that's the reason they receded into insignificance.
We'll get
to that later. A pair of diamond-encrusted swans with ruby eyes stretched their necks towards each other, swinging precariously in their golden-hooped perches. The workmanship was superb and the material stunning, but it was the fact that each gold hoop passed through her nipple that made me feel rather faint. The nipples themselves were rather seriously inverted, but this fact was disguised by the large pearls that covered each one, dangling on a thin gold chain that looped from side to side of the main hoop. Now, my one question is, if her nipples are so freaking inverted, how do you pierce them at all? I mean, the mechanics of it are mind-boggling.
We discussed this only briefly before we started recording, and I'm not going to say what I said, but there's, and I don't know this for sure because I've never done it, but my guess is you got to squeeze something. That's the only thing I can think of. And I don't need to hear any feedback about that.
I mean, do you use like an upholstery hook that's got like a hook to it to get on in there? I mean, I just...
No, because that would be painful.
The whole process of piercing one's nipple is painful.
Okay.
Come on.
Ellen G. writes, I love Claire's reaction to the nipple jewelry. And she sends us a link, which we will share. It's an article about it. It's very interesting. And many fashionable women in the late 18th century even went so far as to expose one or both nipples on occasion. Get ready, Summer. Hold on a second. You need to listen to this. Or their bodice was cut so low that with the slightest movement, a nipple, quote, might make a surprise appearance. Like a peep out and say, boo!
No. What was...
What do they call that?
Nip slip. That's what they call it nowadays. Nip slip.
But that's different. This was planned. The nip slip are... Oh, no, sometimes they're not. But they're not. Now, mind you, the woman would act just slightly shocked at the occurrence. Uh-huh. But it was well known that by wearing gowns that cut... Of that cut, it was bound to happen. I can just imagine men of the day placing bets as to when Madam X's nipples would appear during a ball or a supper. And she says it must have been hilarious to watch. I said, Ellen, you had way too much fun with this scene. And Connie just saw too much. Her advice? She said, look, my advice is to avoid Googling this because it can lead to the hard stuff. Some of it's meant to be painful. Jenny also, and we have a link that that she shared as well. Jenny also had another opinion about this. Madame Nestle de la Tourelle's gown, the cut below the breasts with gauze, was indeed a fashion. But the nipple jewelry, especially pierced nipples, is something I haven't seen before for the time period. What the heck? It almost reminds me of pasties for a stripper. I have seen jewels that attach to the front of the stomacher, but never on the person in that way. I'd love to see Diana's research for this, or if it was something she took liberty with. However, Jamie's offer to do it with his teeth for Claire is pretty priceless.
Ow!
So we hear that Master Raymond is supposed to have pierced her.
That is the rumor.
Yes.
Could you imagine?
If he did that?
No, I'm just like, if you think of all the people in Paris that the guy you'd want to go to for a nipple piercing is like the curmudgeon that owns the little like...
The frog?
The little... the frog guy. Would you go to the crocodile shop and be like, can you pierce my nipples? You sell everything else. You look like you should pierce my nipples. I want to go to a clean, sterile environment where they do tattoos as well.
So Claire's? There's three of them. Claire needs to relieve her feet. She's got pains. She goes into an alcove. Uh-oh, Claire? And sits and takes her shoes off and puts her feet on the chair across from her. But she's not alone for long. A comte or vicomte comes in and sits in the chair, pulling her feet into his lap against his crotch. Just no. That's enough right there. Like, if they keep it, this scene will be hilarious. He's kissing her feet, calling her ma petite. And we get the hint that Claire's feet aren't petite. She takes her feet away, stands up to go. He huffs some snuff. And then sneezes on her just as Jamie discovers them in the alcove. She thwops him across the face with her 10-foot-long fan. And he trips over her size 9 shoes and falls into Jamie's arms. Now, this may not be... This is definitely current, but it may not be of the correct time period. Mm-hmm. But according to Zappos.com, shoe size conversion chart, a UK size 9 for women is a US size 11 women's. So, I'm not going to say anything except, Claire, if the 1940s sizes are similar to what the sizes are today, I know some people who feel your pain and also will not blow over in a windstorm. That's all I'm going to say. So, Jamie dunks the man in the fountain. That sounds reasonable. How would you have handled that as Jamie?
I don't know how I would have handled that as Jamie because I do not have his same sensibilities.
What about as Claire?
As Claire, didn't she knock him with the fan? I mean, I think she did exactly what she would expect it to do. But I think that Jamie sometimes lets his jealousness of his possessiveness of Claire get in the way of his smarter judgment. Because look where he forgets where he is.
LNG writes, throwing the Vicomte into the fountain granted Jamie and Claire a night at the palace to keep them there. And I think that's interesting. It actually would be a good move if they could stick around longer. But I never got the hint before reading Ellen's statement that, I mean, Jamie did not want Claire to go into an alcove. I don't think that was planned. And Claire didn't want what happened to have happened. But I could see, outside of the event itself, I could see that maybe they either might use a situation to their advantage or go there with the idea, or maybe not a firm plan, but an idea of, you know, if we could stay longer, the longer you're there, the more people you can influence, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting statement. I don't think they did not plan the whole alcove thing, I don't think, but because he did not want her with other men and in an alcove where something could happen. But it's just an interesting...
It definitely worked in their favor.
Exactly.
I don't know how much of it was...
I don't think any of that was planned, but the event was not planned. But I don't know if they, you know, had a private chat beforehand about, you know, let's see if we can make this into a weekend. Or overnight, whatever. So they end up being overnight guests. During the conversation when the king said that they should stay, and he pinches his favorite nipple, just like, really? It's not enough that they're already on display. Why do you have to, like... The answer is he does it because he can. Because
he's the king, he's and he king. Does what
exactly.
he wants.
We learned that Jamie had played chess with the French Minister of Finance. And of course he won. He'd learned to play from Colin McKenzie when he was living at Lier, when he was in his teens. And I thought, isn't that symbolic? Learning to play chess from a master. Jamie's still upset about the alcoves, but too tired to do anything about it. They go to their room, and Jamie gets after her about the alcove, and she says, yes, but aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play? I love her anachronistic things that she says that she knows Jamie will have no idea about, and it's not really fair, because there's no way he could know, he could, you know, truly respond, but it's still funny. It's still funny. And he's a pretty good sport. Jenny writes, the Mrs. Lincoln comment. I love when Claire throws in a modern comment that she knows Jamie won't understand. The next morning, Claire's still sick, morning sickness, and they get an invitation to lunch with the king. There will be an English guest. And so the reason they were invited is because the king learned that Jamie's wife was English, and so he thought that would be a good thing. Murta arrives with a change of clothes for them, and Claire does some magic to get herself into her clothes. Outside in the gardens, Jamie tells Claire about the statues of the four humors of man. Jenny writes, the statues of the humors. Interesting for Claire to be surprised by them. I'm sure older Claire in later books will be familiar with them from studying history of medicine. But the use of the humors is definitely fading from medicine by the middle of the 18th century as more doctors turn toward physic during the Age of Enlightenment. Intrigued, he asks her about her time and if they're taught. She says, no, they have germs. Jenny says, I love it when Jamie says, germs. The Statue of America, a young maiden in a feathered skirt and headdress with a crocodile at her feet. Jenny writes, crocodile, oh boy, it's HMS foreshadowing ahead. So there are rumors that Master Raymond keeps the company of Kabbalists and occultists, maybe even witches.
And crocodiles.
Well, you know he keeps the company of crocodiles. So Jamie brings up the Comte Saint-Germain and how he is likely more dangerous, and jokes that he'd rather not have to come save her from burning again. And that's really kind of not a good joke. I mean, it's not really funny. Cranesmere is something that Claire, if I'm not mistaken, will remember. Whenever it's brought up in any book, her feelings never change about it. I mean, it's an awful, awful thing.
They shouldn't change about it.
No.
Because the facts don't change. A group of villagers wanting to burn you alive any easier? No, I agree.
And the fear. That was a rough scene. Claire always remembers it, and she still feels the heat, ha 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 ha, years and years later. The memory of the fear seems never to leave her. Connie writes, a vision in watered aqua silk hove abaft our resting place. That's nautical, she says. In loud raptures over the divinity of the play the night before, the three ladies with him echoed his opinions faithfully. Connie writes, ha! Bet you thought the vision in watered aqua silk was a woman, didn't you? Absolutely. I had to read it a few times to make sure I got the sexes straight. Jamie describes one of the courtiers, the sausage, reputation as not being able to, quote, keep his Roger in his breeches. So, Roger, I wonder if that's interesting. There's a verb to Roger someone, and then there's the new male character introduced at the beginning of this book. They're not related. It just makes me laugh. Claire schools him, though. Women don't name theirs. So basically, there's a lot of names that get mentioned. LNG says, later on in the gardens, as my notes have it called, the roll call of names of Penny. Connie writes, a digression into the names men have for their penises. Summer, get ready. Oh. Roger, Dick, John, Thomas, Peter are a few brought up. I'll bet Ginger and Summer have more.
Oh.
I don't. So I'm not offended, Connie, but yeah. I don't know what you're trying to... No, Summer, we don't need to Google this.
I'm going
to
Google this.
Connie, don't ever say that again, because Summer will Google. Summer will Google.
Names for a man's... Willie.
Willie, there's one.
Yeah, Willie. 174 ways to call a penis something other than...
Oh, my gosh. We don't have time for 174.
Oh, other than a penis. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Just do the highlights.
Oh, these... I know I'm going to read them all. Adolf. Albino cave dweller. Baby arm. Baby maker. Baloney pony.
Baby arm. That's beaver, wrong.
Beaver basher. Beef whistle.
Summer. Okay, wait. Summer. We don't have time for them. Go through and do the ones that make you fall off your chair.
Bell on a pole. Bob Dole. Bratwurst burrito.
You can go on to the
Chubby seat. Cranny axe. Custard launcher.
Oh, nasty.
Deep V diver. Ding dong McDork. Dipstick. Disco stick. Dude piston. Easy rider. Okay. Excalibur. Flesh flute, flesh tower, fun stick, heat-seeking moisture missile, jackhammer, Jimmy, John Thomas, Johnson, joystick, kickstand, King Sebastian, Kroll the Warrior King, lap rocket, leaky hose, little Elvis, Longfellow, mayo shooting hot dog gun, gross, meat constrictor, meat injection, meat popsicle, meat stick, meat thermometer.
Okay, enough of that one.
Meter-long King Kong dong.
I don't know. I think they're rhyming.
Moisture and heat-seeking venomous throbbing python of love.
That's too long. Come
one-eyed on. Trouser snake, one-eyed yogurt slinger.
Oh, Summer. Don't do the nasty ones. Do the funny ones.
Pink oboe.
Okay.
Purple helmeted warrior of love.
That's too long.
Ramburglar. Schlong dongadoodle. Schmeckle. Schnitzel. Sebastianic sword. Single barreled pump action bollock yogurt shotgun.
Summer, not the long ones. That's impractical. The short, funny ones.
Fine. Twig and berries. Wang doodle. Wee wee. Whoopee stick.
Okay, she's in the W, so you're almost
Wiener
done.
Schnitzel, yin yang, and they want to end this with yogurt gun. But there's also There's
no Z?
There's no Z.
I'm a little bit disappointed.
Oh, people. Here's one. Womb broom.
Oh my gosh, that's kind of crass. Okay, that's enough. We've spent too much time on this.
Oh my gosh.
That I think my favorite is that oboe.
Pink
that's
oboe.
That's too much. Okay, thank you, Connie. Jamie tells her that he's only ever heard it a Frenchman call his Georges. Which Claire says loudly. And the guy who bows with the swollen eye, the little man from the night before.
It's true.
That makes me laugh. So then we come to another iconic scene from this book. One of the most culinarily iconic scenes in the entire series. The Nightingale Luncheon. In a poll she did in December 2011, Teresa from OutlanderKitchen.com asked readers, which Outlander food will you refuse to eat? The clear winner, with 46% of the vote, was this dish. And I'll link to that. To read the description of the dish almost made me slightly nauseous. This line was kind of shocking to my gut. The king, who turned from his conversation with Madame de la Tourelle long enough to pluck one of the nestlings from its place and pop it into his mouth.
Gross.
Like it was a little...
Bonbon.
Popper, a jalapeno popper or something. And then the whole crunch, crunch, crunch. That alone is enough to make me want to excuse myself. Right now. LNG agrees. The dinner of nightingales atop the pies. and how the king took and ate the babies. Crunch, crunch, crunch. I'd upchunk if I had to witness that. Jenny writes, eating birds like the nightingales that Louis has on the table was quite common. Lord Beautetour, the second to last royal governor of Virginia, liked cardinal birds, so they'd pay kids in the city of Williamsburg to collect them, and they'd be served on the governor's table. Squab, or fledgling pigeons, were pretty common too, especially for middling sorts who would keep a dovecote specifically for raising pigeons. Claire leaves quickly to take care of business in the bushes. Jamie is there with her, being pissy. I'm like, it's not cool, Sir James. But he does apologize. So, Summer, did you have morning sickness?
I had all day sickness. And
for how long?
6 months.
Oy.
Like most of it. And then I went from being pretty much nauseous all day to just feeling very uncomfortable. But no, it was awful. I am almost envious of Claire with her one and done in the morning, because I know that for me, I would wake up, be hungry, so I'd eat, and then I'd eat a few bites and be nauseous for 3 hours, and then I'd be hungry again, and then I'd eat a few bites, be nauseous for 3 hours. Like, it was this constant, but I never threw up.
Oh, that's almost
worse. Was the worst part. It never, like, it was just constant. So, you're lucky, Claire.
Connie writes, and I love the part that comes next, where Jamie again reveals his helplessness in the face of Claire's pregnancy miseries. I didn't mean to snap at you. It's only that I feel such a thick-headed clot. I see you in a misery, and I know I've done it to you, and there isn't the slightest thing I can do to aid you. So I blame you for it instead, and act cross and growl at you. Why do you know just tell me to go to the devil, Sassenach? He bursts out. So Clara laughs and says, go directly to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. And I love this reference, and I looked it up, and yes, it works. Parker Brothers began to sell the game Monopoly in 1935. Jenny writes,
I literally hate that game. That's my least favorite
really?
Game. It takes forever. It I never have 3 days to set aside to play Monopoly.
Jenny writes, in this chapter, I feel like 1 minute Jamie is yelling at Claire and is really stern with her, and the next, he's like pudding in her hands. Even he says that. And then there's the Monopoly reference that he doesn't get. Love it. At this point, the king and guests come outside. Claire can see that two coaches have arrived. It was the English party. The reason that Jamie and Claire had been asked to attend. The Duke of Sandringham, whom Jamie knew from childhood, and whom Claire had met at Leek. Claire sees a young woman in the English party as well, and she described what she's wearing, how she's like an English rose, and her skin and blooming and everything. And the woman's identity is not given, but if you remember from last chapter, we can safely assume who it is.
Who it will be.
Who it will be. Who will be confirmed. So we can guess who this is. And Claire is also reminded of a dress she'd worn in her own time, a cotton one with red poppies. This coincides with a wave of homesickness, though she concedes it could be that she's hearing English voices speaking English. And then Claire is scared out of her damn mind. She sees Frank, not Frank. She knows who it must be then. Jamie sees him too. What was there to be done here with the king? To draw weapons in his presence was death. Just as Jack Randall comes within hearing distance, within sword's reach, she lays a hand on Jamie's arm and says Jamie's name. Twice. And then faints.
Whew! Which is honestly probably the only thing that would have stopped him. Honestly.
Oh, Jamie? Yeah. Oh, gosh. So I remember reading this and being shocked out of my socks. And I'm like, what the what? What the hootie-wotty? What the who? And, you know, of course, when you're reading it, you can go on, and we're stopping right here. So you've probably gone on to see what the heck is happening. But Jenny writes, oh, no, it's BJR. I'd faint, too, out of pure fear, just so Jamie could carry me away.
Of course.
Of course.
So a full chapter, an interesting chapter, definite entertainment at the court, and the food, and the dressing, the dress, and... because they're in France and the importance of Versailles, I think we're pretty, and because of what Terry has said, alluded to, they're going to be at Versailles. They're going to have, you know, the really, really involved costumes, because this, that's the whole point that she's working on.
These scenes alone are going to blow the entire Outlander budget.
Oh my gosh.
No wonder they're getting less episodes.
Oh, it's all because of, it's all Diana's fault. Connie shared some great links a little while ago that are very fitting for this, and we'll include links to them in our blog post as well. It's some videos about Louis the 14th and actually the 15th and on. It's and the 16th. It's about the building of Versailles and the rise and fall of Versailles. And it's three parts, and they're a good like 45 to 55 minutes each. They're a good chunk. And the beauty of Versailles, you'll see the beautiful costume, everything. It's just very, so thank you again, Connie, so much for sharing that. We will put that, all of that in our blog post.
And that is the read along for the week. And now on to something a little bit special.
We don't want to give a whole huge introduction. It'll become very apparent very soon what our holiday gift to you and to us is. We just want to just listen. We hope you enjoy it.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. At the Outlander Podcast, this is Ronald D. Mork talking to you from the Sound Bay. Just want to wish you and everyone at the Outlander Podcast a happy holidays. Happy holidays, everybody.
Happy holidays!
I'm Davina Porter, and I've had the privilege and enjoyment of recording all of Diana Gabaldon's Outlander series, and I'm wishing everybody that's listening a happy holiday and a Merry Christmas. I myself this morning have been baking cookies like you wouldn't believe, plus Christmas breads, because my family's coming in, and for me, it's my most favorite time of the year, and I'm even happier because I'm halfway through one book, and I've got quite a few coming up in the new year. Always gratifying for narrator. So to everybody, have the best of holidays and all the very best wishes for 2015.
Hello, Outlander fans. This is Outlander Anatomist, and I write the blog found at outlanderanatomy.tumblr.com. I am here to wish you the merriest and happiest of holiday seasons. One that will warm the cockles of your very own heart. And let's all take heart, because April isn't that far off, and we are all in this together. You can?
A equipa Outlander Portugal deseja um bom Natal a todos os fãs portugueses. Acompanhem-nos no Facebook e no Twitter. And Merry Christmas to all.
Bonjour, ici Erika de Outlander Québec. De notre belle province, je souhaite à tous les fans de Outlander de passer un très beau temps des fêtes, de belles vacances d'hiver ainsi que de nombreux moments inoubliables en famille. Joyeux Noël et bonne année à tous!
Hi everyone, I'm Gianna from Brazil. I just want to wish you all a very happy Christmas and happy New Year's as well. Olá pessoal, meu nome é Diana e desejo a todos vocês um Feliz Natal e um próspero Ano Novo. Slangeva.
Hi, my name is Rachel McGrath. I played Mary in the wedding episode. I helped Ned find the wedding dress, shall we say. I just wanted to wish all the Outlander fans all around the world the most magical holidays. Thanks for your support.
Hi, it's Ailey Grant here. Merry Christmas and a happy Hogmanay from a cold and frosty Scotland. I hope you have a great holiday, however you choose to celebrate. I'll be celebrating with my family in front of the fireplace and toasting you all with a nip or two of very fine Scottish whisky. All the best to you all for 2015. And don't forget on Hogmanay to only open your door after the bells to a tall, dark, kilted, handsome man, bringing gifts of a lump of coal for the fire, a black bun, and maybe even a wee bob or two. Thanks again to all of you for your support over the last year, and a massive thanks to Summer and my wee can of Ginger for just being pure dead brilliant in Gallus. Maybe and hopefully soon we can have a wee natter face to face. So lots of love to y'all, and cheery bye.
A word of best wishes is Sassenach. From the bottom of our heart, happy holidays and happy new year. And with Outlander, I'm sure it will definitely be. Buone feste e buon anno nuovo dall'Italia. Da Italian Outlanders, il mondo di Jamie e Claire.
Liebe Outlander-Fans, die German Sassenachs wünschen euch allen fröhliche Weihnachten und ein gutes neues Jahr. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Buon Natale e Felice Anno Nuovo. Joye Noël. Feliz Navidad. Nalik Creul Agus Bliana Vaor.
Hi, I'm Tracy.
I'm Carol.
And we are my
Outlander
Purgatory. We want to wish all of you out there, all of you Outlander fans, a lovely holiday season.
Lovely.
We want to thank Ginger and Summer at the Outlander Podcast for giving us this opportunity.
And we want to wish you a very happy and healthy new year.
As well.
Because what's coming in the new year?
Oh, I don't know. Could it be...
Part 2. Part 2, baby.
All right, guys. Have a great holiday season. All the best to you and yours.
Happy holidays.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello and Merry Christmas from Dunedin. That's Edinburgh, Scotland. It's David Weinzock here, two-time guest on the wonderful Outlander podcast, castle explorer and battlemaster at the Bannockburn Heritage Centre. Did you know that Christmas was banned in Scotland from the 1580s thanks to John Knox's Reformation and didn't become a holiday again until 1958? So, with that in mind, wishing you a very happy Hogmanay.
Hello, my name is Beatriz. I'm the person behind the Twitter and blog Outlander Spain, and to all the Outlander fans, Feliz Navidad y Próspero Año Nuevo.
This is Outlander UK. We want to wish you a Merry Christmas. Slanty Ma and the Outlandish Bakers are here in Scotland as well.
Merry Christmas!
Slanty Ma! Lang me your lumreek.
Warm Yuletide greetings to Outlander fans, cast and crew from the Catriots. Noli Creel from Catria Nation admins, April, Audrey, Gayla, Kathy, Kat, Laura, and Marie. Happy Hogmanay!
Happy holidays, Outlander clan!
This is Valerie,
Tress,
and Leela.
From the Dark Isle Pie Fan.
We'd like to thank the Outlander podcast
and all of its listeners this holiday season
for giving us support and warm wishes. If you'd like to hear or see more about us,
please visit our website at www.darkislepipeband.com
or like us on Facebook at Dark Isle Pipe Band.
Merry Christmas, Outlanders, and have a Happy New Year.
Hey everyone, it's Teresa here from Outlander Kitchen, wishing you a happy holiday and Merry Christmas. Peace and good food to you all. Slán ga mhaith.
Outlanders in Ontario would like to wish you the happiest of holiday seasons and much success for the new year to come. So no matter where you are, we hope that you enjoy your time with your family and friends. Happy Solstice, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
Outlanders en Ontario vous transmet ses meilleurs vœux de bonheur, santé et prospérité et vous souhaite un très joyeux temps des fêtes et une belle année à venir.
Hi everyone, I'm Barbara Schnell, Diana's German translator, or as she puts it, her German voice. For me, Christmas came early this year when her agent called me in July asking if I'd be interested in doing a new translation of Outlander. I only started with book 4, way back when. So this year my dream of the past 20 odd years is coming true, and I do feel truly blessed. Thank you, Diana. Thanks to the fans for your unbelievable support. Merry Christmas, Frohe Weihnachten.
Dia Gwaitha Weirin is Misha Outlander Ireland. Sasta nulach de gach dinna e Outlander clan Fudden Down. Nulach shana dit sasanach.
Hello Outlander fans. My name is Jake Ferretti and I play one of the clansmen in episode 4, The Gathering, opposite the delightful Catriona Balfe and the equally gorgeous Graham McTavish. And I'd like to wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas and a healthy and prosperous New Year.
Hei, mitt navn Maja Holst-Evensen. Jeg administrator for Outlander Norway, fans inn for norske Outlander-fans på Twitter. Selv om jeg bare har vært en del av dette samfunnet i kort tid, har jeg blitt tatt imot med åpne armer, og jeg håper all respons vil være like positiv som den jeg opplevde den siste tiden. Så på vegne av den norske fangruppen vil jeg ønske alle sammen i Outlander-samfunnet en riktig god jul og et godt nytt år.
Hi, everybody. This is Marley Bird from the Yarn Thing podcast. I want to wish all of my fellow Outlander fans and Hewlands Hooligans a very happy holiday. Hopefully you've had a chance to pick up your Clickets and make some wonderful holiday gifts this season for the loved ones in your life. I'll talk to you guys soon on the next Yarn Thing podcast.
Hello, the house. This is Kim Lovelady from Hewlands Hooligans. The other admins and I wish the wonderful ladies of Outlander Podcast and everyone in the Outlander fandom a warm and loving holiday season. Please be safe and enjoy your holiday.
Salut! Un petit message pour tous les fans francophones d'Outlander. Joyeux Noël, bonne fête et bonne année 2015 de la part de toute l'équipe d'Outlander France.
Hello, my dear Outlanders. My name is Ivana Mitrovic and I represent Outlander Serbia. I wish you happy holidays and all the best from the bottom of my heart. Slanče. Srećni praznici, moji dragi Outlanderi. Od srca vam želim sve najbolje. Živjeli.
Hi, this is Mary.
My name is Blake.
And we're the hosts of Outlander Cast. We just wanted to send a lot of love and joy to Summer and Ginger and all of the friends and listeners of the Outlander podcast.
We hope you guys have a Merry Christmas, a Happy Hanukkah, maybe a Kwanzaa.
Winter solstice, even.
If you're like into the whole Druid thing, you could do that too. So have a wicked good Happy New Year, and we hope to talk to you guys very soon.
Hi, Outlander fans. Outlander en Español wishes you happy holidays and a wonderful New Year. Felices fiestas y próspero año nuevo. Bye.
Hello. I'd like to wish all the Outlander fans all across the world a very, very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year when it arrives. I only have one request, though. Please, please eat lots of turkey, but make sure you stay away from boars. Love, Geordie.
If he don't say that at last they died, Mary of soul, she laid me in a day. Over the edge we chime. Billow and breeze, hunky man I sees, mountains of boobs and bums. All that was good, all that was fair, running my hands through Jamie's red hair. Sing me a song of the virginity gone, say could that last be I? Mary a soul, inhibitions foregone, Jamie a
shot.
Hi, this is Sarah with Outlander TV News, and on behalf of myself, Johanna, and Stephanie, we want to wish you a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a Happy New Year.
In shoes, Seanish Agave Brown and Analabin, a Giev, the Nolig Sorish Chakriel, a Gisplinur, who cervical cigars. Have a fantastic winter warmer with family and a new year filled with all the good stuff. From Scotland, all the very best. As we toast in my home district of Cowell, Guyam Slange is Furin Guy. I wish you all health and joy. Sir Crean soon dach slan, and your hearts jolly and whole. Sir Town Gunvon ye suyant, and your houses without a drop of damp. Sir Kishjin mean ye lan, and your meal chests nice and full. Slangeva.
Hi, it's Monica from Facebook fan page Outlander Polska. With all my love from Poland, Wesołych Świąt i Szczęśliwego Nowego Roku.
Hi, this is Kathy. Dominique and I are the admins of Outlander the Netherlands and we'd like to wish you happy holidays. Hele fijne en gezellige feestdagen en een fantastisch 2015.
Hi, this is Marie McKenzie from the Outlander Plant Guide. I want to wish you a happy, joyous holiday season and an outlandishly happy new year.
Hi everyone, Louise from Outlander Denmark here. Jeg ønsker alle en dejlig ferie, og til de, der fejrer det, en rigtig glædelig jul. So, what I was saying was, we wish you all a very happy holiday, and to those who celebrate it, Merry Christmas! Love you guys!
Hello, Outlander fans. This is Jen from OutlanderMusings.com wishing you and yours all the best of the holiday season.
Hi, Outlander Pod. This is Ian Smith speaking to you from Glasgow in Scotland. Just to wish you all a very happy Christmas. Have a great new year. And 2015 brings you all that you wish for. Stay safe, guys. Stay happy. Bye. Oh, and hopefully it's going to hold on April. Cheers. Cheerio.
Hello, Outlander Podcast and Outlander fans. This is Desiree from adramofoutlander.com. And I would like to wish you and yours Nalle Kriel Blien Uva Ur, or a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. From my heart to yours, Slange Va.
Hello, you Outlander fans. It's Marie from Finnish Outlanders. Hyvää joulua ja onnellista uutta vuotta.
We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Frohe Weihnachten und einen guten Rutsch von Outlander Deutschland. Tschö!
Hey, Outlander fans all around the world. This is Robert Williamson. I played Torkel Iverson in episode 5, Rent. Dougal was kind enough to give me some of his oats to help me feed the family. And I just want to say this via Outlander Podcast to each and every one of you. Happy holidays.
Hi, Outlanders. I am Francesca, one of the admins of Outlander Italy. While waiting for Outlander's return, we wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Ciao, ciao!
I'm Alistair and I'm the Scot.
And I'm Lonnie and I'm the Sassenach.
And we're here to wish you the very happiest of holidays.
Yes, to Ginger and Summer and all listeners to the Outlander Podcast.
Merry Christmas and Happy Hogmanay!
Olá, eu sou a Elaine, do Outlander Brasil.
E eu sou a Vanessa.
E nós queremos desejar a vocês um Feliz Natal e um excelente Ano Novo.
Não se esqueça de visitar nossa página facebook.com/OutlanderSeriesBR. Boas festas!
Ahojte, volám sa Lívia, ale všetci ma volajú Lila. Pochádzam zo Slovenska a som adminom slovenskej stránky Outlander na Twitteri. Ak som sa k vám pridala len nedávno, cítim sa milovaná mnohými ľuďmi. Zmenili ste mi život k lepšiemu a včerovate mi úsmev na tvári každý deň a preto som veľmi poctená, že vám v mene slovenských fanúšikov môžem zaželať veselé Vianoce a šťastný nový rok. Slánže vám!
Vi från Outlander Sweden önskar alla världen över en underbar helg med familj, släkt och vänner. God jul och gott nytt år!
A very merry Outlander Christmas to all you Outlanders out there, and may your new year fulfill all of your Outlander dreams. This is your very own Mackenzie Gaelic singer, Fiona J. Mackenzie, and you can find my music at www.fionamackenzie.org and on Twitter at Gaelic Singer. To all you Outlanders, Nollig Chriel agus Bliana Va Uad.
So we hope you've enjoyed our myriad of holiday greetings to Outlander fans.
From literally around the world.
From around the world. We want to thank everyone who participated in our holiday greetings spree. And now from Summer and I, from the Outlander podcast, we wish everyone, every Outlander all over the world, a blessed winter solstice or summer solstice in the southern hemisphere, a happy Yule, a happy Hanukkah, a very, very merry Christmas.
Can't we just say like Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa?
Oh, I can't. I'm not that talented. But happy, blessed, merry everything. And we wish you from the bottom of our hearts the best of holiday seasons. And
well, I don't know about you guys, but all I want for Christmas is for it to be April 4th.
So thank you as always so much for listening. We have had a marvelous time putting this episode together, and we look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/outlanderpod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.